why would we bother doing a podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot. That would just be a print artist?
Better.
Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
Always problem is like, what's next after this? Like that freeze of like, oh no, my project that I got comfortable in is about to end. Now what? Where do I go from here? That it's always right. That kind of freak out where, you know, you have that 9 to 5 and it seems stable, but you know, I mean, they could fire you anytime too, you know? So it's really no different than anything else, except taking a chance on yourself and just trying it. So,
yeah.
So, when you pitched Farmhand, how many did you pitch for?
Originally I was going to, I pitched for 30, which in hindsight seems insane. Like, I think, honestly, I mean, the industry shifted so much. I mean, right. I don't think most books, unless you're probably a Robert Kirkman or a Brian K. Vaughan, you're not going to go 60 issues nowadays. You know, I think that's done for now. I think, honestly, I'll probably, if I do any more kind of long form series, I can't see going beyond like 12 to 15 issues, to be completely honest. So, yeah.
Just taking notes, don't mind me.
Go for it.
So let's bring back the technology and what you just said. Do you feel that the technology is making everybody so, I just need content and I'm going to jump to the next thing so fast that I can't stay focused on 60 issues because I'm going to get bored of it? Or do you feel that the comic stuff is just separate, different, or, you know, readers, or what are you kind of feeling that?
I think, you know, people only have so many hours in the day. You only have so much attention span and you only have so many dollars in your wallet. So I think that's what the fight is. So I don't ever want to be the kind of creator that is like, you know, it's a battle. It's all a competition kind of thing. Me versus everyone else kind of thing. That's not what I'm about. But the reality is that there has never been as much content as there is right now. And I know with myself, you know, I'm a lifelong comic fan and I cannot keep up with the amount of what's being put out. And on top of that, it's never been more expensive than it is right now. Right. Comics, I mean, you know, $4, $5 for a 20-page comic, you know, is a lot. Especially when you're keeping up with Netflix, which is what, $15 a month now? Our HBO Max, that's $15 a month, except that they're giving you bottomless content. You know, they're giving you new episodes every single week. You know, how do you keep up with that? I'm not entirely sure. So, and then when you get into things like social media and the fact that people are getting hit in the face constantly, you know, every time you go online, you're getting hit with someone trying to sell you something. So I think that's what we're competing against. So I think, it's not a matter of like, I don't want to sound like I'm kind of being negative about readers. Like, it's not their fault that their attention has been fragmented. It's just what we're swimming inside of. We are being fragmented, whether we want to admit it or not. And, you know, it's what we're inside of right now. So I think we're all trying to figure it out. Every creator I've talked to, guys who've been in this industry for a really long time, we're all in the same boat. We're trying to figure out, how do I hold people long enough to tell the story I want to tell? And interesting, this is a kind of a side story that I think relates. Right before COVID in 2020, or actually in 2019, my wife and I had, you know, the pleasure to go to France right before COVID hit. And we were at a French comic art festival, and this is our second time being there. And their comics are an art form; they really are. They're presented very, very well, very respectfully. So the comic convention festival was a completely different atmosphere than you would see in the States. A lot of guys in like suits and ties, like, you know, that kind of thing, like who are there for comics. And what was interesting was at some point, We all had dinner together, and I was talking to some of the French creatives, and we were talking about format. And I was telling them, I really love how the French comics are packaged. You know, they're basically, they don't do floppy issues. They go straight to a hardcover, I think 48 page format. And I just think it's really, it's just a rock solid, beautiful presentation. I think there's something there. It feels special. And, you know, I was talking to the comic artist about it, and I was saying, you know, it's really frustrating how, you know, it makes me really frustrated with how we present things in the States. And I was explaining to him, to them, how we do it, where, you know, basically you put out a first issue and, you know, it'll be somewhere, you know, probably between 20 and 32 pages ish. You're going to sell it for $5. And, you know, that'll probably be your highest selling issue because everyone wants an issue one. The problem with that is by the time you get to issue two, you're probably going to lose 50 to 60% of your sales. So basically you have that first 20 to 30 pages to hook your people. And if you don't hit it, you're kind of screwed from there on.
Yeah.
And they were just, the French creators were completely horrified when they were like, how they were literally like, you can't do anything in 20 to 32 pages. Like it's an entire album of a French comic to hook people. You know, it takes time to tell a story. So it's an interesting time to be in comics. I'm still figuring it out as well. At this point, I'm just kind of focused on, and most of the people I know who are handling this current like content ecosystem, we're all sort of just focusing on making the best thing we can make. I think the question is, where is the best place to be? And, you know, I don't know if the traditional means of doing this, if it's going to work 2 to 5 years from now. I don't know if this is going to work anymore. And I'm for it. Like, I want everyone to do well. But when I look at, I think the writing is kind of on the wall and we all sort of know it. You know, I think we kind of know, you know, the 20 to 30 page floppy worked really well when the comic was 99 cents, you know, that worked. But now I don't think that's going to work anymore. So I think we have to shift, which is going to be a fight because a lot of people don't want to shift. And I'm namely retailers. A lot of retailers do not want to shift.
Yeah.
So that is the question we're all facing right now that I'm kind of trying to navigate. And I'm as I plan my future post Farmhand, that's where I'm looking. I'm looking at what is the format, the best format for me in the future.
We're in the midst of that same thing on a different level because we're just small press publishers. So we do most of our things through crowdfunding, which was great, is awful. Now we know people that, you know, have been doing great for a long time that they just can't get the numbers because of, you know, inflation. People don't have as much fluid money right now. And beyond that, you know, it's hard to tell people like, yeah, how about instead of one book a month, you get a book a year, like, because we have to pay the creative team to be able to create this for the next however long. So it seems like you're saying, you know, even within the core part of the industry that's been the way that it has been for so long, you know, for Matt and I, we're still fairly new into all this. And it's Matt and I are fascinated by processes. And so hearing somebody talk about what you just did about, you know, people are really starting to debate, you know, what's the right thing moving forward. It's a conversation that Matt and I have been having for a long time. And there's no clear answer. Matt and I are very much the let's throw something to the wall and hope one thing sticks. Currently, until there's a clearer answer for us, we don't have much of another choice except for to keep trying to tell the best stories we can and pay for them as we can.
Yeah. I feel like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that's a big part of it, because I've seen a lot of folks move over to crowdfunding as well. I mean, I think what's clear is you got to hook your people. You
right.
Know? So that, I mean, that was my focus before COVID and has remained the focus. You know, I don't need, you know, maybe I don't need 10 to 20,000 sales. Maybe I just need a committed 1,000 people. And you know, right. You know, cause I know a lot of my people. I know a lot of the same people have been with me since the early years of Chew, and they're still with me now. So maybe the key is to just get a committed core, treat them well, you know, they'll buy everything I ever make from here on. and you know, try to expand as much as I can in the meantime. But maybe, you know, I don't think we're gonna get those sales that we used to get. Not in this industry in its current iteration, at least.
Well, like you just said, though, you know, finding that committed core, it's interesting because you'd be coming at it from the complete opposite direction. For Matt and I, mm-hmm. we're nobodies that are trying to introduce ourselves to people as far as the crowdfunding side of stuff goes, build our email list, all that kind of stuff. For you, it's somebody that's done Chew and Farmhand and has a new series coming out. So you have people that know you to such a different degree, you know? So, because you've never done anything crowdfunding-wise, right?
No, I mean, we've done a few things like, you know, we've done plushes and that sort of thing through right. Skeleton Crew Studio. But John and I, you know, we've considered, we're talking about probably taking a swing at it. I could see it happening. You know, we have a good friend, Nick Patera, who used mm-hmm. to draw Manhattan Projects. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing a book called Axe Wielder John over at Zoop. And it's done very, very well. The work looks excellent. So it's something we're kind of considering. We're probably going to test the waters, I would say, the next year or two, just to see what happens. And I know guys like, you know, Ben Temple Smith or Jim Mahfood, who are killing it on crowdfunding. They're all in on crowdfunding. So we'll see. I think it's, again, that goes back to what we were just talking about, you know, going directly to your people,
right?
Mm-hmm. And just kind of fostering that base and kind of, you know, building off of it.
I think for us, that's one of the things we have enjoyed on the crowdfunding side of mm-hmm. it. You know, a lot of people hire other places to put together their packages and stuff. But for the most part, Matt and I were like, man, we actually enjoy that part of it. It's like, let's put something together mm-hmm. for these people. Yeah. But the enjoyable thing to us was having a direct contact to our fans. And we've met a lot mm-hmm. of really good people along the way. And then we've met people that we've started working with on other projects because I mean, one of the things you'll really see if you do crowdfunding is the comic book community of creators are typically going to be the majority of your crowdfunding sales. That's always fascinated us where it's just like, oh, well, that's cool. I mean, you know, they make books too. I'm glad they want something that we did. It'd be interesting. I'd be interested to watch that too and see how it is coming from more traditional release to a crowdfunder.
Cool. Yeah, I think you'll be seeing a lot more of that. I mean, I know a few folks right off the top of my head that are going to be doing that kind of stuff. And it's not that, I don't think it's a matter of leaving behind, you know, sort of the legacy method. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think it's about leaving behind the traditional stuff. I think it's, you know, I think there just needs to be a kind of rethinking of how we do, how we do the traditional comics.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I know we've had that conversation too about what should we do? Should we do trades? Should we do single issues? Are people more willing to just, you know, well, it's going to take longer to do a trade, but they get more story and then it won't drop off as fast if they're going to, you know, get maybe, you know, at least a 40 page book, you know, like a small, you know, 40 pager or something like that, or do a full trade, you know.
But the catch to that of our side is having to foot the bill first.
Exactly.
To get the product done.
But it's kind of like you said, and we were talking about the instant gratification of like comic sales were so much better when they were 99 cents because you could get that instant gratification mm-hmm. of like, oh, I can go in with $5 and get 5 books. So if one sucks, I didn't waste all my money on one book trying it. Mm-hmm. It was like less, you know, like, let me take a chance on this one. Ah, oh, but there's that one too. What mm-hmm. if let me try that one when you could just be like, I'll just get all of them. Maybe $5, you know, let me try all 5 of these. And then if one hits, then I'll keep running with that, you know? So I feel like that's.
Yeah. I used to.
Yeah.
I built my comic collection during, I mean, it was like Death of Superman, you know, mm-hmm. Nightfall, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I was a kid, you know, I used to have, I used to work with my grandparents on the weekend and we'd like cut grass and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I would have all this allowance money and it wasn't all that much, but I remember going to the comic shop every Friday and just loading up mm-hmm. on comic books. I mean, a stack of comic books. And that's really hard to do nowadays. Yeah. Like, I mean, my kids love comics.
That stack is $300 right there. You just hold your fingers
up. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to shift, I think. I think it'll have to.
I think it will, too. Especially you know, with it being so much, you know, you'd walk into a comic book shop when you were a kid and you could get the core story, but now you need, you know, all the secondary stories that are all tied into the main story. So then you're like 32 issues deep to get a single story, and Batman's in, you know, 18 of those. So it's an interesting dynamic right now watching, because it seems like the bigger companies as well, they're trying. They're just seeing what's going to work and what's not working. So there's been a whole lot of just, you know, retrying or trying different stuff. I guess for Matt and I, we'll just let everybody else figure it out first.
Yeah. I will tell you that I think one of the keys is I think comic books need to we need to treat it less like a disposable type of medium.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think we need to treat it like when you go to a bookstore, you know, typically in a book with a bookstore, they put out the first version as a hardcover. You know, then later on they put out a soft cover. But that first version is usually like the best version. Mm-hmm. And I forget who it was. I want to say it was. I don't know who it was. It's an old school comic creator said that only in comics that we put out the worst version first.
Right.
I think that's true. I mean, I love the floppies and everything, but I really just want a really nice hardcover for my shelf.
Yeah.
It'd be great if we could just start there. So, but again, that's kind of retraining the base. But I think that's the key, even what you were saying about, you know, sort of, you know, it's the joy of putting the book together. You know, I used to work in a print shop for several years, so I love making books. I used to make mini comics all the time. And there's a part of me that kind of romanticizes, kind of returning to that. You know, even when I look at guys like Andrew McLean with Headlopper, or I'm going to butcher his name. Michelle Feef, he draws Capra.
Okay. Don't ask me to pronounce names.
I love his work. I mean, but I love the guy's hustle, because he's, you know, he's writing it, he's drawing it, he's doing every part of the production, he's mailing it out himself. It's all signed and numbered. And there's a part of me that just, like, I don't know if it's financially feasible, you know, to put all that much work into one thing. But I want it to be. Yeah, it can't be. But there's a part of me that there's just something kind of beautiful about that. It's like it's like a gift. Like every issue I'm giving you, I'm literally putting all of myself in it and giving it to you like this gift. There's something really special about that. And I think, you know, we need to tap into that with comics. And I think that's in the back of my mind. And I don't know how that's going to work out yet, but I keep going back there.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to hit it back on that point of, like you said, when you went to France, and how it almost seems like we devalue our work so much that people treat it as it's not art. It's just a comic book, mm-hmm. you know, and I like to see the two sides of it, of where you're going to take it. It's more of an art form, like the guys in France. And they treat it so delicately. Like, this is art. Like, this is a piece of art. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But then also on the flip side, you can go to where the culture, like manga, and everybody in business suits, they don't think of it as a kid's comic book. They think of it as, it's just culture. This is what, I'll read it on the subway on the way to work, and I'm a businessman in a suit writing it, and there's manga everywhere, and it's a cheap format, but they just consume so much of it. And it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just that flip flop of like, okay, which kind of way would you want to go? You know, like and with us, it seems like it's kind of like everybody's fighting just to get a job, or like, I'm just going to make a comic. And, you know, like, I know this is like a weird hot take, and I know everybody says the rising tide raises all ships, but I tell Aaron it also waters down everything as well. It also lowers the bar. If you're going to raise that tide, it lowers the bar on quality, you know, and that almost hits with the French artist of, not that you shouldn't make comics, because it's great and it's art and you should, but, you know, like, there's no, it's kind of like Marvel used to have that house style, and now it's just gone. it's whatever. You can't, like, you could almost pick up a Marvel book and you're not 100% if it's a Marvel book. Like, the artist in there, you know, it's kind of the same thing with Disney. And I know these are horrible examples because Disney's horrible. But we still look, you know, like, you know, it's what it is. But you kind of get what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of that, yeah. Like, I kind of like it as that artistic piece like you're talking about. Like, if it was me personally, I would rather put that effort into making a beautiful, hardbound piece of art that you feel special getting as opposed to just, like, crank it out and just get some money. You know, like, right. I almost feel like it's a money grab in sort of a sense, but not, you know. Yeah. So there's just so many different pieces.
I think a lot of it's going to fall on creatives to kind of take an entrepreneurial kind of take on everything. I mean, at the end of the day, the hardest thing I've had to learn being a comic creator is that, you know, I am my own greatest advocate. Like, it's on me to figure this stuff out. You know, it's really not up to Marvel or DC or Image to figure this stuff out. You know, it's up to me to not only produce the art, but to make it viable to where I can live with it. You know, it's not up to them to figure this stuff out. It's up to me. And I think there is some truth to what you were saying about kind of, you know, artists kind of devaluing themselves. That is true as well. And I mean, I can tell you that as someone who has worked, I've dipped my toes in and worked in Hollywood stuff. And I think that doesn't help either. You know, I've optioned things. I just wrote a script for AMC a couple years back for Farmhand. And I can tell you right offhand, like, off the top, there is a devaluing of the comic creator in America. It's probably not just American. It's probably not just an American issue, but that is part of it, because even Hollywood doesn't really look at comics as, like, a real storytelling medium.
Right.
I mean, they can talk.
Oh, like, that's a nice script, but okay, we'll fix it for you.
Yes. Right. Like, I mean, that is absolutely 100% true. There's a level of, you know, before you sign the contract, they're very, you know, oh, you're a great storyteller, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. After you sign the contract, they're 100%. Yeah, you know, this worked in comics. It's not going to work in the big, it's not going to work where the big boys play.
Yeah. Oh, that's cute. Like, and they pat you on the head and be like, okay, we'll take it from here. That's sweet.
Yeah. So to an extent,
you kind of want them to just be like, you know what? Maybe you should just actually, I'll cash that check. And then you guys can worry about what you're going to do with the story. If they want the real story, they can come buy my stuff.
It depends. I think that's one thing I wrestle with. You know, I do worry that I always look back to Alan Moore. You know, I look at the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and I've never read the comic, but the movie looked horrible. And I do think that a bad adaptation will hurt your comic,
right?
And hurt your reach. So, like, I'm very possessive over, you know, even with Farmhand, like, I want to make sure that our culture's
different now. Like, I feel like if they butcher-jobbed your work, I feel like you could go back on social media and stuff and be like, how about you actually know the real story? I don't know, because he didn't have that element before of where you could kind of fight back a little bit against that.
I don't want to. I'm too lazy for that. I don't have the bandwidth to do that kind of thing. I'd rather just, like, I was actually thinking about this morning, just kind of like, I was on Instagram kind of surfing, and, you know, comic creators are not just comic creators now. Like, comic creators, you know, we have podcasts, we have, you know, I'm like watching these other comic creators do these Instagram reels, and I'm like, holy crap, like, the production quality on this stuff, like, you're not just a comic creator, you're like a talk show host.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is happening? And it reminded me of this old Mitch Hedberg joke from
Love him.
A long time ago. And he was talking about, he's like, you know, it's funny. He's like, when you become a comedian, all of a sudden everyone wants to know if you can do other things. Then when you do other things and tell comedy, and they're just like, hey, you're a comedian, can you write a screenplay? Like, no, I just want to tell jokes. And I kind of feel like I'm that with comics. I just want to make comics. You know, I don't really want to do all this other stuff. I just kind of want to do the comic thing. So yeah, I don't really want to do the fighting with people on social media thing. But I just think I'm more focused on just telling the story I want to tell. I kind of have gotten to a place in my career where I feel like I've earned the right to be respected. Yeah. And I don't want to be treated like I'm second class anything. So I'd much rather pass on certain contracts, even if they have like certain dollar amounts attached to it, because I don't know. Like I'm just possessive over some of the stuff.
Yeah, you don't trust people with your baby.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
That's what I was going to say.
I get that completely. Yeah. I couldn't imagine giving the rights to something that I created and then watching what happens, you know, just like with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I just can't even fathom that. I would be real distraught probably the rest of my life.
Yeah. That's the hard part because of the fact that like, they're real good at doing TV stuff and you're not, though. That's the only hard part, is like, I kind of have to trust them to an extent because they might know, you know, a few things. But I think like if they do like huge story changes and like, hey, we're gonna cut Luke's hand off, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess for me, I've just couldn't hit the place where, you know, I'm just kind of okay with my comics being comics.
Right.
I don't want to be Alan Moore here. Like I was just reading some Alan Moore quotes this morning. I don't want to be Alan Moore, but you know, I am kind of hitting the place where I just think, well, why, at what point did I decide that this had to be an adaptation? Well, there has to be an adaptation. Not really. It could just be a comic and we could just be happy with that.
Right.
But that said, you know, like I said, it was a great experience kind of dipping my toe into the Hollywood thing. I learned a lot, you know, about writing. I think I came out of it a better writer. But at the same time, you know, a lot of things would have to happen, obviously. You know, hooking up with the right people makes a difference. You know, hooking up with the right creative partner in that space matters a lot. And, you know, I've touched base with some really cool people that I maybe would trust. But again, just like in comics, you got to find the right collaborator. And if you get the wrong one, it goes to hell really, really quickly.
Right. Trust is hard earned, especially in comics.
Yeah.
We've been let down way too many times. You know, you come into it with trust issues anyway, because again, it's your baby. And then you meet people along the way that you thought have good intentions, but maybe don't. So it's, you know, that honestly played part into why we haven't had the podcast in a while now, is we, you know, step back from everything to kind of reassess, like, well, what do we want to accomplish with this? And, you know, are the people that say they're helping but aren't helping, what benefit do we get out of that? Not that everything's transactional, but some friendships are more transactional than others. So for you, success, is success finally feeling like you've done something where you should have some sort of respect?
I think success is just it's persisting and persevering through obstacles and through my own insecurities, and it just making something. You know, I think that's success. You know, and I would be lying if I said I didn't care about, you know, making money, but that is, I mean, that is part of it. I would love it if it's profitable and I can actually put food on the table.
Yeah, for sure.
But that isn't the most important kind of variable. I think just getting up every morning and persisting, even when I don't want to sometimes, even when the stories are hard. Because I mean, even with Farmhand is probably the most difficult story I've ever had to tell. It's really, because it's so emotionally tied to me, you know, it's not a biography, but it is me basically doing therapy on myself and putting it in the comic in a lot of ways. Yeah. It's really hard, where, you know, the new book I'm doing with Boom Mosley was very easy to write. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, there's a lot of heart in it. It's very personal to me as well, but it's coming from a different place. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's success is just getting the thing done, period.
Yeah. It's good. Are you reading anything right now?
Am I reading? I have a giant shelf of comics I've gotten over the years. Just like, you know, you go to shows and people just give you things and you buy things. I have a giant shelf of comics I have not read yet. They all look amazing. I'm actually working through, I just got Scotty Young's new book in the mail.
Fairyland?
The Me You Love in the Dark.
Yeah.
I just got that in, so I'm working through that. I'm just kind of staring at it. I haven't read it yet. And Jonathan Hickman's book, it was, A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance. That's Remender. That's Remender's book. Yeah, that's an excellent book.
Are you watching anything?
I need to write these down.
Yeah, Righteous Thirst for Vengeance and The Me You Love in the Dark. What am I watching? We just finished, Night Sky. It's an Amazon series with J.K. Simmons. That was very, 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 very good. See, that's the thing. Is like there's so many shows out there. Like, I hadn't even heard of the show before. And I can see by the look on both of your faces, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I've never heard that show in my life.
It was very good. That we just binged the first season because my wife cannot let it lie. Like, once we start something, I know it's going to be a week of me staying up late watching everything. So we just finished that. What else? I think that's pretty much it. I mean, we started a show called Utopia on Amazon as well. Mm-hmm. We didn't get very far into it. The show that we really loved was Raised by Wolves on HBO Max.
I have seen that ad.
Okay.
That ad.
It's very, very good. It only got through two seasons and they just canceled it with all the cuts. So we were just completely devastated. We're devastated by it.
But, you know, it's just like comics. It's just not the same anymore. You're not going to get 6-7 seasons out of a show anymore, which is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Right. But I would say it's still worth checking out. It's very, very good. Two seasons.
We just finished. That's the thing with streaming is I never know how long stuff's been out anymore. But we just watched all of The Patient, the Steve Carell on Hulu. Absolutely wild. If you like brain stuff, he's a therapist and somebody kidnaps him and chains him to the basement for intensive therapy sessions. And that's the entire plot of the show. And they're all like 20-minute episodes. There's only 10 and there will only ever be 10, but it was a very well-written show.
That's cool.
I wrote those down though. Well, that was my questions, Matt. I know you have to leave in a couple of minutes cause his back's all messed up.
Yeah, I'm broken.
Oh, sorry.
Sucks, man.
Feel better.
Punk rock.
I'll do my best. Man. Yeah, skateboarding over the years, you know, it's whatever. Sitting around drawing. It's all taking its toll.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been fun. I got to hear. Yeah,
we'd definitely love to have you come back on and hang out and.
I wanna,
when the new book drops, and
I want to put them on with Doug because they said some of the same stuff.
Yeah,
and I think that would be hilarious. I don't know if you know Doug Wagner at all, but you guys have.
I've heard the name.
Yeah, some similar thought processes. I mean, to all of the people listening, we thank you guys for checking out Beards and Comics podcast. And Rob, stick around for a second so we can say bye properly. But until next time, thank you guys. We'll be back next week with another episode.
Later.
Beards and Comics Podcast is a production of Catalyst Comics Studio. To get in touch with us, visit catalystcomicsstudio.com or search for Beards and Comics Podcast on Facebook. Hey, if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It doesn't sound like much, but it helps a whole lot.